Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today, I am joined by the absolutely, the stunning, the talented, the impossibly amazing, it's Katie Brooks. How are you doing, Katie?
Hi, I think that's the best intro I've ever had.
Oh, well, we try to be complimentary here.
No, I'm even better than I was now.
Well, it's great to hear it. Katie, let's talk a little bit about you. So you are a musician.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. I could give you an intro, but I think it's better to come from the horse's mouth. Yeah, that thing. That exactly that.
It's always a difficult one to answer because it's like, well, hello. It's sort of like a job interview almost. I like to sing and, I play with the guitar sometimes. I'm a singer-songwriter and I also produce my music too, or so far I have. Writing is a big thing for me. It's like my lifeblood. I get around.
That's really lovely to hear. And I'm not saying that like all musicians don't write their own music, but I do think that kind of, it is a pretty special thing that you create your own music. Do you ever write for other people as well?
Or? I have done. And it's something that I'm getting into more. Like for a long time, I think I was a little bit, not funny about it, but I was like, oh, you know, one must only write from the depths of their own soul about their own stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but a purist, that's the word. But now I don't feel that way. I just think that, you know, as a songwriter, you generally just have a wealth of different feelings and thoughts about everything, and why not write for other people? And it can still kind of be your own take or perspective, just delivered by somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's almost like an element of snobbery sometimes? Like this is the songwriting that is correct and okay.
Definitely.
And this is the songwriting that we look down our noses at.
Yeah, 100%. I think I was guilty of that for a while. And again, I've changed my mind about that, particularly, I feel quite passionate about the fact that there's like a real art to writing a pop song, because some people don't like pop or more commercial songs are like really kind
I love pop. Just putting that out there. I do. I love pop.
Me too. There's such a time and a place for it.
Yeah.
It really lifts you up. And sometimes the only thing that's going to work for a certain mood is pop. I listen to it on a regular basis. But there's obviously there's bad pop and there's good pop. And it's the same with folk. There's bad folk and good folk. And so, yeah, there's definitely a snobbery there, but I'm not into it. I just think it's either a good song or it's not. Doesn't, you know, and it can be, you can use really simple lyrics and it still be a masterpiece. I don't subscribe to the idea that it has to be kind of ambiguous or abstract or loads of metaphors, you know. It's like, actually, this isn't me trying to sidestep into it, but like the song How Long Will I Love You that I actually covered recently and released.
Okay.
It's a song by Mike Scott, the Waterboys. Actually, if you look at the lyrics, they're really simple, but it's golden.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And I think it's more about like what people take away from it as well. Like I recently read, and I say recently, I mean literally like 2 days ago, that Mariah Carey wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You in like 15 minutes with her, like the person she wrote the song with.
Wow.
And I'm going to be honest, like a lot of people, I'm kind of sick of that song. It's been played a lot. We're all used to it. But at the same time, like it's a song we all know and love. Even if we're sick of it, like I loved that song once upon a time.
Sure.
And I think it's more about, you know, the fact that it's brought joy to so many people is more important than the fact that you say, oh, well, that chord progression isn't complicated enough. Like the musicality isn't complex enough. Like music is about joy and making people happy or you know, not
or
necessarily
feel.
Or feel it.
Yeah.
Makes people feel, and
yeah,
I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing that, then you're ticking all the right boxes.
Exactly. Then you must be doing something right. I completely agree. And I actually have to say, I didn't even realize that she wrote it. So I'm really impressed by that.
Well, she wrote it with somebody else, and I don't know like
what
that means.
Often that means that person walked into the room,
she was there,
had a cup of coffee and left.
No, I'm sure it was an exact 50-50 split.
I'm sure
it was. So Gaiety, let's talk a little bit more specifically about your music. So I know you say you blend folk, soul, blues and country. There's a lot of genres there,
yeah,
to blend together.
It's quite the mix, isn't it? Yeah, I think it kind of reflects my personality in terms of, you know, one day I can feel one thing, and then, I mean, like any human being, but it's pinning myself down has always been a bit tricky, because, you know, I might pick up my guitar like today and something quite sort of singer-songwritery, folksy came out, even though I had an electric in my hand, but tomorrow I might pick it up and it might be much more kind of bluesy and raw, and it just depends on the mood I'm in. And I listen to a lot of different types of music, and I've never been into the idea of just sticking to one vibe. It just,
yeah,
that doesn't work for me. It bores me, so...
But I love that, you know, and I feel like it's a little bit of a cliche, but whenever it's usually on a first date, I'm going to be honest, usually on a first date, somebody will say to me, what kind of music are you into? And I always answer with, well, everything. And I feel like it's such a cop-out answer, but I genuinely feel like my music taste spans so many different genres.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like this is the same with everyone, even though they don't like to admit it. Like, we're sometimes in the mood for different things, and
exactly,
it's nice to tick all the different boxes and move around and just go with what feels natural. And I feel like some of the biggest criticisms some artists get is that they're not being versatile enough. I love Lady Gaga, I'm gonna put my hands up, and I love that she plays around with different genres and goes places you'd never think she would.
Yeah.
So I kind of love that you're doing that. I've just compared you to Lady Gaga.
I will definitely take it.
It's definitely a compliment, I feel.
Yeah, it's huge. I'll take it, and I'll take the Grammy too.
So we are going to be playing some of your music very shortly. We're going to be playing How Long Will I Love You. Mm-hmm. Which I've not heard yet.
I'm very excited to hear it. You'll like it.
Tell me a little bit about it.
Okay, so this is definitely one of the more heart-wrenching ones.
Okay.
I think recently the guys who premiered it said that it was that you'd probably have to reach for the tissues, which pretty much sums it up. Like, it was when I covered it, I'd wanted to cover it for a really long time. It was a very personal choice. It was something, very personal, connected to someone I was with. And it was kind of like my song in reference to her. And she had actually introduced me to the Waterboys. And when she first started playing me their stuff, I didn't really connect. I was like, I can see that this is good music, but it's not really, you know. And then I saw them live last year when we were together, and I was just like, oh my God. I sobbed through most of the concert. It like reconnected me to something I'd lost, like in myself, with my connection to music, love. It was quite a profound experience.
Yeah.
And then I realized that's how I felt about her. So I carried that with me for a long time, and then I don't know, it felt like the right time to do it, and it felt like it was finally a time where I could put all of my emotion into it, because it felt like it needed to be really raw. And so I went and I did it, and that was it, really.
I genuinely love that so much. Do you think it's like it's like one of the wankiest terms ever, but it's my favorite term to use. It's like a paradigm shift. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. I always say paradigm shift.
Most
yeah,
people
constantly.
Look at me blankly, like, what does that mean?
What is that? No, that's something that I say quite a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of paradigm shifts in my life, definitely. Like almost on a daily basis. I mean, yeah, 100%. Although I felt those feelings when we were together, when we broke up, it was like, oh my God, like I am ready to sing this song.
Yeah.
It was my way of like dealing with what had happened. It was really cathartic, which is what a lot of my recordings are about. It's like, I'm feeling something. This is the only way, you know, just kind of spill it all onto a mic. But yeah, definitely a paradigm shift.
I do feel like there's something incredibly, special about finding, you know, an artist who is feeling the exact same thing that you're feeling. And it does give you that kind of catharsis, and it gives you that kind of like, it's like that person is relatable to me. That person is going through the exact same thing. And I mean, we're all human. Mm. Whether you're, Ariana Grande or like an artist just starting up or somebody in the middle, we're all human and we all feel the same things. And I think sometimes it's, going, oh, okay, they feel the exact same thing as me. And I think sometimes that's why music is so wonderful.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it makes you feel connected to the world, I think. When you hear, especially when you see it live, when you go and see someone and you hear them and you relate to the lyrics or something in what they're singing, or it's like, oh God, I don't feel so alone. Because it is a funny, lonely existence. Even when we're surrounded by people, you know, we're still having our own very personal, alone experience within our bodies and our minds. And then when you hear a song that someone's written and you connect with it, it's like, oh, thank you for writing that. And as a songwriter, I feel like, God, I wish I'd written that song.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing more special than really connecting to a musician when they're singing or performing or whatever it is. But I feel like the worst thing in the world is when you're trying to have that connection with an artist and then like one of your friends will like try and make a joke or try and charge, and it's like, I'm trying to emote here, I'm trying to connect, and you've just absolutely ruins that.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's interesting how like maybe your friend isn't connecting in the same way that you are, because we're all
it's so
unique.
Personal.
Absolutely personal.
I
think we've talked a little bit, and I think it's time that we actually let our lovely listeners have a little listen to your lovely music.
Time to get melancholic
but in a reflective, enjoyable way.
Yeah.
You know, this is it's not depression hour.
No.
It's time to enjoy. Okay, so this is How Long Will I Love You by the lovely, the gorgeous Katie Brooks.
How long will I love you? As long as stars are above you, and longer if I can. How long will I need you? as long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. How long will I want you? As long as you want me to. And longer by far. As long as your father told you, and darling, as long as you are, how long will I give to you? As long as I live to you, and however long you say, how long will I love? As long as stars are above you, and longer if I may.
Katie, that was absolutely stunning, and it really took me back to like when I was like a teenager and kind of going through these like emotional feelings for the first time. And it really like brought me right back there. So I mean, congratulations!
Thank you.
An incredible song. You made me feel. That's the most important thing.
Thank you. That was definitely the aim of the game.
Good. You've done it. You've done it. In relation to this, it is, I mean, I'm just finding this out myself. It is World Kindness Day.
I love that.
Today. Now, how do you feel about kindness?
For me, it's the most important quality in someone.
Yeah.
Bar none, maybe next to what you were saying, you know, about loyalty, next to loyalty and honesty. You know,
Katie and I had a little chat about this off air just a moment ago, but like those two, that is literally the most important things in life.
Yeah.
Loyalty, honesty, kindness. What else could you want from
yeah,
a person?
Exactly. Because they cover every base really in one way or another, don't they?
Yeah. As long as you know somebody loves you, they've got your back, they're going to be nice to you. What else do you need? You know?
Exactly. You know? Even if they need to give you some difficult truths, like, you know, it's coming from a place of love.
I do struggle with the difficult truths.
Do you?
When someone's like, Callum, I love you, but you've dyed your hair 8 times in the past week and it looks terrible. That I'm like, okay, I know you're trying to be nice, but it still hurts.
Yeah, please, just go easy.
That is one that happened a few days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
I've had a whole mission with my hair. But
your hair looks great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Katie. I'll take it. So because it is World Kindness Day, we're going to be playing a little game. Now, this game is, I feel like it's a little bit controversial in a way. So these are in front of me. I have 6 different like scenarios where a person may be trying to be kind, But I want us to have like a little conversation, a little debate about whether or not these things are the kindest thing to say. Because I think sometimes it sounds obvious, you know, just be nice to everyone. But it's not always that simple. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think the best way to explain this game is to just dive right in. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to jump right in with the first example and we'll go from there.
Okay.
So number one, you're non-binary and are going on a blind date with someone who doesn't know you identify this way. Mm-hmm. You're scared of how to bring this up, and your friend says, just be yourself.
Okay.
Now, I feel like this is a tricky one, because I feel like just be yourself is, you know, it is good advice to give somebody on a first date, but I also feel like it's, if a non-binary friend came to me and said that they were having difficulties and I was to turn around and just be yourself. I feel like it's not taking into consideration their feelings and the difficulty of the situation, and understanding that as a non-binary person, they are a minority and that the other person may not understand or be accepting of that. Mm-hmm. And to say, just be yourself, as lovely as that intention is, I feel like it isn't necessarily the right thing to say.
It sounds flippant.
It does sound flippant. Nail on the head.
Well, thanks. If it was that easy, I wouldn't be talking to you about this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just be yourself. It's like, well, that's actually a little bit more complicated than the way you're putting it. So I think it's, rather than being unkind, I think it's insensitive potentially. You know, it's insensitive to the fact that it might be a bigger deal to that person than that statement suggests.
And I think I'm going to be honest. I'm going to hold my hand up and say that I'm probably not necessarily in this specific situation, but I'm sure there have been occasions where somebody has come to me about a specific issue, and I have been I've been trying to be kind, but I've not really considered exactly how they feel.
Sure.
And I may have been a little bit flippant, and maybe they've reacted in a negative way, and I've been like, why are you freaking out? Like, I'm just trying to be nice to you. So I think, you know, this is a very specific. A specific issue, specific conversation, but I think in all conversations we should, you know, try and understand where the other person is coming from. Even if we don't really understand, at least try and make the effort.
Absolutely. I think I would maybe try and approach it more with asking the person questions and trying to draw out what exactly they were worried about was going to happen, and then talk them through it rather than just a blanket statement.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of not undermining it. It's potentially accidentally belittling their concern, I guess.
So, absolutely. Yeah. I know this was something that came up in First Dates. Did you ever watch this?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
There was an issue with this where they had a trans person on and they were having this conversation, and it was like a little bit brushed under the carpet.
Right.
I think their intentions were to like actually draw attention to this issue, but it actually ended up kind of brushing it under the carpet and acting like it wasn't a thing when it potentially can be. In an ideal world, we could all go on dates, whether we're trans or non-binary or cis or whatever it is, and it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
But sometimes those issues do come up.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a controversial start.
It was a controversial start, throwing us right in the deep end.
That's how we like things at People Radio. Let's move on to the next one. Okay, so you and your partner have had an argument, and you've come home to your flatmates crying. When you open up to them about it, they say it will all be better in the morning.
I don't know, because
I've said this like, just go to sleep
on it.
When you wake up, it's not good. Sleeping isn't going to solve your problems, but it might make you feel a little bit better. I've said this, and I kind of think it is true. It is good advice in a way, but I don't know. What do you think?
I guess it's not even. I mean, it really depends, because if that's all they say, it's a bit lazy.
It'll be better. Like, it'll be better in the morning. Night. See ya.
And I'll piss off. Do you know what I mean? Like, if that's it, then come on. Like, you need to pull out a few more stops, housemate. But there is some truth in that, and I think there are certain things that you can say to someone, just their universal comfort sentences, which are actually really quite nice and quite thoughtful and quite simple but true. And I think saying it'll all be better in the morning is a bit like it's a promise you probably can't keep, because it probably won't be. But saying, look, you know, have a sleep, rest always helps. You know, you may feel differently in the morning. I think making a statement of a sort of a definitive statement is always a little bit risky.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit lazy. But it definitely comes from a kind place. It's probably just, I want to soothe you. I want to comfort you.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I feel, and again, this is something that I do all the time, is I feel like when people come to you and they talk about their problems, as human beings, we have this instinct in us to give that person advice.
Yeah.
Like, I am going to give you the advice that will fix this problem.
Yeah.
When most of the time, we don't have any information that can fix that person's problem. And really, all that person wants is for you to listen.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the most obvious thing in the world, but I can, like, the amount of time somebody's been telling me their problems and all they want is for me to listen. Mm. And I'm like, well, you should do this and this and this thing and this thing and this thing. And maybe just, like, being like, I hear you. That really sucks.
Yep.
And like, I wish I could fix this for you.
100%.
But, and also, like, just being nice. And it sounds like maybe seems a little twee and a little cheesy, but like, just be there for your friends and say, like, I love you, I'm here for you, like, anything you need, I'm here, like, those that, kind of things.
Yeah.
Make all the difference in the world.
That works. Because some of the trite stuff, I mean, not to completely tangent it and go into, but, you know, I know when I went through bereavement, and sometimes people who have been through big bereavements say the wrong thing. But, you know, when they kind of try and make you feel better by, you know, saying really strange things like, oh, well, at least that person died like that, it's a bit better. Oh, seriously, so strange. And actually, what you, like you said, all you really want to say is, look, literally all I need to hear is, I love you, I can't imagine how you're feeling right now, but I'm here for you. And, you know, if you need anything, just let me know. That's all. That's literally all.
Yeah.
You know, so you're right.
And obviously I can't speak for the entire human population, but anyone who I've had this conversation with has said the exact same thing.
Same.
They just want somebody to listen and feel loved and feel like they've got people around them.
Yeah.
They don't need advice. Everyone takes advice the wrong way when you're feeling that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Should we move on to the next one? I'm wondering where we're going to go next.
I know.
I'm excited about this game.
Me too.
Okay, so so many people... Oh, okay. You've taken a new dream job, but it means a cut in pay. You tell your friends that you're struggling with less money, and they respond with, you're lucky to have what you have. So many people are less fortunate than you. Oh, my God.
I hate that.
Oh, my God. It drives me
insane.
It's like you're never allowed to feel sad or disappointed or whatever, because somebody no matter what your situation in the world, there's always going to be somebody who has it worse than you, and that doesn't mean you're not allowed to be
to have
sad.
Your feelings.
And I feel like it also, like, it undercuts, like, do people not understand how sadness works?
No.
It's like, oh, somebody has it worse than me, therefore I am unbelievably happy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, exactly.
For fixing it.
This is a really extreme example, but say, like, I don't know. I don't want to get dark.
You can.
Okay.
Say
both of your parents died, which is horrendous. And someone said, well, there are people in the world who've lost their whole family, so you should just be grateful that at least you... It's like, well, yes, of course I'm grateful for the other people in my life that are still alive and that I love, but...
My parents have just died. Like, so I'm allowed to be sad.
Yeah, like, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's so true. Just because someone might be, you know, someone else is sad, I'm not allowed to feel sad, you know, and it's... It's really crazy making it. It's gaslighting.
It
is
gaslighting. That was literally the next thought I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's absolutely that.
It's and maybe that's a place to go to later on. Like, ah, shit, yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, maybe we need to sit down and think of solutions and da, 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 da. And then later on, if that person is still feeling bad about their situation, then you use gratitude as a means to help them to get to a positive place, not as a stick to beat them with. Like, not as, you should be feeling grateful. More, okay, Well, maybe you should write a gratitude list because that might help you to feel more positive. Do you know what I mean? There's a difference of like how you can deliver that message as well.
Absolutely.
That butt person just sounds like a dick.
And I also feel like we have an issue with like society as a whole where like certain minorities aren't almost like allowed or privileged enough to experience certain emotion. So you see sometimes when like a woman or like I mean, we had Toya DeLazy, amazing artist on the week on the show last week.
Awesome.
And we had a conversation with her about like how if she gets emotional or angry, she can often be deemed as the angry black woman. Oh. And I think that can go for like race, it can be sexism. Like I feel like that's an issue where certain people are almost like not privileged or allowed to have certain emotions, or they're just dismissed. If a straight cis white man gets angry or emotional, he's allowed, he's entitled to do that. But the second you do it as a woman, or you know, so many other minorities, you're being deemed too emotional or whatever.
I experienced that as a woman a lot. Yeah, and it's frustrating. And then when you get more frustrated about it, you're even more like you're unhinged or something. Like you're not allowed to, or you're on your period.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is...
I cannot imagine how unbelievably frustrating that one must be.
Yeah, that's very frustrating. And I, you know, I really have to keep a lid on it because I, you know, I'm definitely a passionate person. And if something hits a particular button, you know, I can, yeah, really kind of get quite feisty about it. Not in an aggressive way, but, you know, but then it works against me because then I'm an emotional woman. Do you know what I mean? And not really allowed to kind of have the reaction that I have.
Yeah.
So, I understand what you're saying.
I can't imagine how frustrating that must be.
Don't get me started.
Okay, shall we do the next one?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're wanting to pursue a polyamorous relationship, but are scared what other people may think about this change. Your friend's advice is, who cares what other people think? Ooh. Ooh.
I mean, again, I think it's more the delivery, because I actually ultimately agree with that, that we can't live our lives like that. We can't live our lives caring about what people think. Not in that respect. Obviously, we should care, be kind and sensitive and considerate of others, but the way I live my life, if it's not hurting someone, then yes, ultimately it'd be great if I just didn't care what other people think. But it's, again, it's the flippant delivery,
isn't
it?
It's the flippant delivery. I feel like if you say that in the right context, in the most compassionate way, and like alongside other things where you're actually addressing the issue and talking about that, how that may affect them, then saying, you know, but at the end of the day, who cares what people think?
Yeah.
I think it's actually quite a nice thing to say. But again, 100%. It's all about the context and the delivery.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have time for one more.
Okay.
You're having a week of blue days and you don't know why this is happening. You once had depression, but are almost certain that this isn't what this is. When you confide in your partner about how you're feeling, they say to you, this will pass.
I mean, again, it's the delivery, because actually there's a lot of truth in that. But if someone just said when I was low, this will pass, just like that, I would struggle with that. I'd feel completely unheard. It wouldn't be what I wanted to hear first off the bat. Like, it's yes, it will pass, but you want to feel heard and soothed and... Yeah,
I feel like that's what it comes down to with like literally all of these that we've had is that you want people to feel like they're actually listening to you and understanding. And again, I can't speak for everyone, but that's all I want. No matter how I'm feeling, when I go to somebody and say, this is how I'm feeling, I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm mad, well, you know, whatever it is, that I want to feel like that person has heard me.
Agreed, yeah.
And you know, I don't need advice. I don't need to be told that this will pass or any of those things. And like in context, yeah, those things are fine. But like at the end of the day, I just want to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And to know someone cares.
Like we've all felt alone in this world. So it's, you know, it's nice to know that there's somebody else out there who's looking out for you, which we all have, you know. We all have somebody like that.
Yeah.
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 All right. I feel like that was a controversial.
Yeah.
Fun, mm-hmm. but also
I liked that.
Important game.
I like games.
Katie, I want to find out a little bit more about you, mm-hmm. but before I'm going to start asking you those prying questions, I think it's time we had a little bit more music. So, this is High Heels, Melanie C and Sync the Pink.
With my high heels in my hand, I'll be dancing home tonight with my high heels in my hand. Cause it's been 5 weeks since I started saving for my new shoes. Coming out of the box tonight, they're gonna wow you. It's been 7 hours since I played the same tune in my room. I'm getting ready for anything, whole body glittering, counting down the minutes, but the time's flown by. Losing track of time, cause we feel so free. I'll be dancing home tonight with my heart.
That was Melanie C and Sink the Pink. By the way, we love Sink the Pink here at FUBAR Radio. We had Mahatma Candy and Ginger Rogers from Sink the Pink on the show for Halloween last year. And honestly, I mean, we've had some tremendous guests here at FUBAR Radio, but they are some of my favourite guests ever. That was a fun show. So if you do want to listen back to that one, just hop on Spotify and search for the Callum McSwiggan Show and give it a little listen, because it was a treat. It was a mess. It was a mess, but it was fun. Katie, I want to talk a little bit more about you and your background.
Sure.
Because I think you have a particularly interesting background. And to be honest, I don't even know how to approach it. So I understand that you kind of grew up in a cult.
I did.
Environment, which yeah. sounds very scary.
It was.
And I have read a little bit about this, so I do know a little bit. But do you want to tell yeah. us a little bit about this?
I mean, actually, it's funny when you said it sounded scary, and I said it was, because it's funny. I think it was so normal to me that I don't think I realized how scary it was at the time, because it was all I knew. And I think at the beginning there was something exciting about it, and you know, the people that we worshipped, so to speak, were so intoxicating and so charismatic, but also so, you know, persecutory and scary. But that you kind of forgot, or you didn't know, I didn't know that what was going on was so yeah. bad. So I can't actually name names, because we're actually looking at, there's a book thing happening.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So I have to keep stuff back. But basically, we joined when I was 4, and it was about living forever in your physical body. And, you know, anyone who died should be deeply ashamed of themselves, even though lots of people have died over time. I mean, it was just your classic cult, you know. My mum bankrupted herself, giving them money and spending money getting over to Arizona, where they were. And lots of very... kind of a mixture of very misguided and actually sweet souls who were just kind of looking for something, like my mum, yeah. who was just quite lonely, and she had 3 kids on her own and was just trying to figure out life, but doing it in the wrong way. Mm. But also some really unwell people who gravitate towards cults, because it's a place to prey on vulnerable people. So
We had Rose McGowan on the show not that long ago,
okay,
and she also spoke about how she was also brought up in cult, and
yeah.
she spoke about how kind of like the indoctrination mm-hmm. of it, and how, I mean, it's not like you had a choice at 4 years old, but you became yeah. part of it at such a young age. Like, it must have, did you almost like believe this was just
100%
normal?
Yeah. Yeah, completely thought it was normal. I mean, I was evangelical about it.
Yeah.
And my sisters, who are a bit older, were less so. The middle sister, you know, she was quite sassy about it and quite rebellious. The oldest one was completely not up for it. Whereas I, you know, being very attached to my mother as well, you know, kind of was very susceptible to her feelings. I was a youngster and I was terrified of death. Absolutely terrified. I used to wake up in the middle of the night, like screaming and crying, like what if it happens, and what if you die, and you know, like unnaturally so, and thinking about it far too much for a 5-year-old. I completely, you know, I used to get up and preach, and I used to sit, you know, they had these kind of intense meetings, and I would sit and at the front and listen and cry, because I was thought I was so moved by
yeah.
what they were saying. Obviously I wasn't. It was just like we were being whipped up into a frenzy, which, you know, can make you cry, but it makes you think that there's something profound going on when it actually isn't. So
one of the most inspirational figures to me is I'm sure you've heard about the Westboro Baptist Church and all
yes.
of that. And I don't know if they technically Same. Are defined as a cult, but it kind of feels...
Oh, it's a cult.
It's
yeah.
a cult, okay. and I think Megan Phelps Roper, who was
yes.
the younger... And I remember seeing the Louis Theroux documentary about her when
yeah.
she was a part of it, and then seeing her defect and kind
yeah.
of become her own woman. And she did this incredible
TED talk
about... Like, did you see that as well?
Yeah.
Did that have an impact on you personally?
Yes,
seeing that?
Definitely, definitely. That I saw the Louis through both of the documentaries, yeah. and they both really moved me in different ways, and also made me feel quite angry, like watching, you know, what was going on. And but also it hit a raw nerve because I was those girls, like younger. I mean, they. Really kind of they went into their late teens, didn't they? Yeah. Although one of them got out quite young. One of them was really hot, actually. Real thing for her.
I love that that's the takeaway. That is amazing.
Totally. I like followed her on Instagram. I was like, I sent her a message saying like, I really admire you. And she replied. And I was like, oh my God, I got a reply. Maybe I can coax her away from her boyfriend. No. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole thing was really moving in the TED Talk. Yeah, definitely. It was wonderful to see them get out and see how amazing it is that a human mind can completely shift perspective from something, because they were right in there, and to see that then they'd had that profound experience with it was those Dutch guys or something.
Yes, yeah. I saw this. Yeah,
they'd gone out into the outside world and realized that these people weren't evil, and they'd opened their mind. And I just thought that was really beautiful to see that that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know that when you were younger, you had kind of a phase, if that's the right thing. I hope you don't consider that offensive, of almost thinking that you might be a boy, that maybe you were trans. And I'm sure this had something to do with your sexual identity as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know that the cult that you were a part of kind of shut you down quite heavily. And was very like wanted to push you out, but then also that I know that there were certain things within the cult that were kind of like there was polyamorous relationships and things. Yeah. So it was almost like a hypocrisy of
completely.
This thing's allowed, but this thing isn't, and that must have made you feel. Well, I don't know. How did that make you feel?
I mean, it was really messed up. I don't think I knew how I felt about it again when I was a kid. I mean, I knew how I felt when I was. When I was shamed for being who I was, you know, calling myself Peter and having short hair and kind of, you know, just doing my thing. I just thought it was completely normal because my mum and her friends and everyone around us, like back in Bristol where I'm from, when it first sort of started, they were really sweet and nobody made a big deal about it, not even at school, which I think is pretty cool for back then, you know, or not cool, but, you know, quite forward thinking, comparatively speaking. And so I didn't realize, so it was quite a shock when I sort of woke up under my mum's chair in front of 1,000 people and heard the main, one of the leaders, the female leader, kind of pacing up and down on the stage, saying how much of a bad mother my mum was and how sick I was and how I needed to change immediately. I was an abomination, blah, 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 blah. And my mum not saying anything, just remaining silent, just sitting there, just taking it. And
I can only imagine how that must have felt. It must have been scary.
It was scary. Yeah. It was terrifying. I felt like there was something deeply wrong with me, and I felt very ashamed of myself and just kind of disgusting, really.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was being told that I was. And I was, you know, a bubby. You know, I had no idea. And, you know, I always tell this part because it's kind of, it really represents the innocence. I said to my mum afterwards, I said, can you go and find her? Please find her and tell her I'll change. I promise I'll change. But can you ask if I'm allowed to wear dungarees?
Oh.
And
that's heartbreaking and sweet at the same time. It really shows the innocence of
it. Yeah, exactly.
And I guess the innocence of young LGBT plus people, you know, however they feel, there's so much talk about it being like deviant and all these things, and that you just wanted to wear dungarees.
I just wanted to wear, and I've got a great pair of dungarees.
Yeah.
I wear them whenever I can.
I love that. How do you know, now that you're making your music and you're being out there as a person, do you feel like you're almost giving back? Not that obviously you didn't cause a problem, but like, do you feel like you're giving back to people who weren't as, I guess, privileged as you were growing up, etc.?
Weren't as privileged in terms of being able to be out.
I mean, once you were able to kind of find your way, which I know that a lot of people struggle with. Obviously, you went through a lot of difficulty.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, and I really get that because it took me a really long time. I mean, a really long time. You know, shame is a difficult thing to shift. And it's, you sort of have to find a way to extract it and give it back to the person who gave it to you, because it's something you receive from somebody or something else. It's, you know, it's so it took me a really long time and to feel comfortable. I mean, I found it difficult to use the word gay or lesbian. I kind of sat on the fence for a long time, and that was my own personal experience. I'm not saying, I totally believe in bisexuality is an absolutely true and wonderful thing, but I'm not bisexual. Like, I just, I'm a total leser.
You know what you are.
I love that.
If I'm allowed to say that, I should be allowed as
no,
I'm a lesbian.
No, you kicked off Fubar Radio. Can't say the word leser here.
Leser. For me, that was like really, it's like people talk about reclaiming that word. For me, I like to say it because I feel it's empowering for me, because for such a long time, I was scared of that. I felt, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. Oh, you know, what if I hear somebody else say that about me? And, oh, you know, whereas for me now saying it, it just feels like, yeah, you know, I'm empowered. I'm reclaiming it for myself.
I mean, I was called a puff all the way growing up, and now I love it. I'm like, I'm a massive
puff.
Yeah. Massive puff. And I get to say it on the radio.
Yes.
Which is the best feeling in
Wonderful.
The world.
Wonderful.
Let's have a little bit more music, cool. And then we're going to dive right into some of our listeners' sex confessions. This is a little bit of Mika.
Cercherò una scusa per sentirmi fragile, perché tu mi fai paura e non lo so nascondere. Cuore è sempre ciò che vuole, ma io vorrei soltanto i graffi sulla schiena, nudi in me retrovisore, in macchina io e te con la radio accesa, ma è così chiaro, l'amore è un gioco in cui non vinci mai. E dimmi cosa vuoi spiegare, abbracciami.
Cosa vuoi spiegare, abbracciami. Oh, cosa succede?
are you ready for some sex confessions,
I'm
Katie?
Always ready.
And
for sex
I say some sex confessions, but we've been gabbing so much, so we've only got time for about one.
Okay.
But we'll make it a good one.
Nice.
Okay. So when I first had sex, I didn't use protection.
Ooh.
I was 16, still maturing through puberty, which plays a big part in being able to participate in sexual activity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I'm going to be completely honest. When I first had sex at 16 years old, the same as this person, I also didn't use protection.
Mm-hmm.
It just was not like on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really wasn't on my radar because, and I feel like that was all like, I'm not pushing the blame or anything, but I feel like the lack of sex education was a huge thing. So when I was 16, I was like, oh, having sex for the first time, I'm not going to get pregnant. They're not going to get pregnant. Like, we can do this unprotected because we're both gay. This is fine. And like, I genuinely had no real understanding of the issues around HIV and AIDS and like STIs and all the rest of it. So like, I don't blame this person.
Not remotely.
Like, I if anything, it shows like how fucked up the education system is.
Exactly. It says more about that than it does. I think... Sadly, it's quite common, you know, and I think a lot of people probably think to themselves, well, it won't happen to me. Or do you know what I mean? I think that's a common. I know that I've thought like that before, you know, that'll be fine. You know, it's not going to happen to me. It'll be fine. Just this once, you know, with lots of different situations. But no, it's definitely something to be not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we need to take away a lot of the shame and the guilt and everything around sex, because I think for. So it's so unnecessary. So many of us feel guilty and ashamed about all different kinds of things. And we just don't need to. Like, if we all make mistakes. And I feel like even saying it's a mistake is adding.
Yeah,
you know, we all do things that, you know, that maybe have potentially put ourselves at risk. But, you know, there are things that we can do, you know, if you have unprotected sex, if, you know, if there's an issue of pregnancy there, you can get the morning after pill. If there's an issue of, you know, HIV, etc., you can go and take PEP, which is the pill you take the next day, which will basically, if you were to contract HIV, stop you from doing so. You know, there are ways around it. And I feel like if we had more conversations about this and open conversations around this and take away all the judgment and shame, then maybe more people would, you know, take the right steps.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish we could chat more because I've been enjoying chatting
too.
To you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
It's been lovely.
But this has brought us right up to the end of the show. But I'm not going to let you leave without telling all of our lovely listeners to go and follow you and do,
please do.
You know, support you in every way, shape and possible. How can they best do that? Obviously, get your music.
Please do, guys. And it's always really lovely to hear from you. So I'm on Instagram. I'm Katie Brooks. Katie's with an EY. On Facebook, I'm on Spotify, same Katie Brooks. Lots of stuff on YouTube. There's lots and lots of stuff coming up as well that's about to be released. Just come say hi, follow, and let's social media hang, man.
Amazing. I love it. And obviously we are going to be continuing to play your music for the rest of time here at FUBAR because we love you and adore you and can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been an amazing guest. I'm going to play you out with a little bit of Changing.
Nice.
Luke Evans. See you later.
I think I broke myself far beyond help, more than I'd ever admit. I know you blame it all back on yourself, trying to bend just to fit. Oh, don't go changing just for me. No, don't go changing just for me. 'Cause whatever I said, whatever I did, you know I didn't mean it. Oh, don't go changing just for me. You don't have to speak just to break the silence. Don't have to cry just to make me weak. Don't have to stand when the walls are shaking. Don't have to lie just to make me believe. Oh, don't go changing just for me.
I've ruined every chance I've ever had without ever skipping a beat. You're there to hold my hand time and again, forgetting who you wanna be. Oh, don't go changing just for me. No, don't go changing just for me. 'Cause whatever I said, whatever I did, you know I didn't mean. Oh, don't go changing just for me. You don't have to speak just to break the silence. Don't have to cry just to make me weak. Don't have to stand when the walls are shaking. Don't have to lie just to make me believe. Don't have to shout just to make me listen. Don't have to hurt just to make me feel. Don't have to crash when my world is burning. Don't have to lie just to make me believe. Oh, don't go changing just for me. You're the one.